Everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and today we've got the greatest guest in the world. It's Dan Harris of the Leading Off Podcast. Dan, I've been waiting to have you on all year. What the heck is going on? Where have you been?
You know exactly where I've been, man. I've been doing a lot of stuff. I don't think many people think about, you know, who works in this industry full time and who doesn't. But, you know, up until a few months ago, I was doing Leading Off. I was doing fantasy work, but only part time. I was a lawyer, as most people have ever listened to Leading Off now. And now I'm full time editor in chief of Fantasy Pro. So technically
he's my boss.
Your boss. Correct. So, I mean, let's be honest. I'm just taking notes right now while we do this podcast of A, how nice you are to me. B, how in depth your baseball knowledge is. Although I've been listening to all the podcasts, of course, and you are crushing it. So I feel pretty confident in that. So, yeah, I'm excited. But, you know, look, just getting everything ready. I was not expecting the complete postponement of the baseball season. I'll be honest. That was not my playbook. But, you know, we're still here. We're still ready to talk. So it's going to be great.
You know, when you say you're grading me on how nice I am to you, I know you pretty well, and I think I'll get a better grade if I'm not nice to you. So I'm just going to do it. I'm going to tell everyone Dan is patient zero.
Okay, that's true. I'm not. I mean, we were joking about this before. We had our team trip in January. I got back. This is before, you know, coronavirus was a thing, really, you know, especially here. And I basically had the fever, had the cough, had everything, and went to the doctor and wound up having pneumonia. And that's sort of where it goes. So I'm literally sitting here thinking, I have recovered, thankfully, but I'm legitimately sitting here thinking, was I patient zero at this point? Was I the person who, you know, we obviously didn't think, but I had been on an airplane. Thankfully, my wife has been fully healthy this entire time. So I'm thinking it's unlikely. But yeah, I'll be honest, there have been some skeptical looks at me from all our friends who are like, what, pneumonia? But anyway.
So, guys, here's the plan. I know coronavirus is going on. Baseball's going to happen eventually, hopefully. And people are still doing their fantasy drafts this week and this weekend. So we're still going to be giving advice. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen afterwards. Trust me, we will keep doing the podcast. We'll keep entertaining you. So what Dan and I are going to do today, actually, Dan, why don't you tell them what we're going to talk about? I'm a little bit sick, so I'm trying to talk as little as possible. I'm not a little bit sick. I'm a lot of bit sick.
Yeah, I am making a note of how you're powering through here. That's a big plus for you. But yeah, so one of the, look, Bobby and I are close, you know, outside of this. You know, obviously we work together. He's a great guy. We've been on the podcast forever. But we don't always agree. And sometimes disagreement makes for a fun podcast. So what we sort of thought might be fun, at least for today, is to harp on some of the players that Bobby and I are widest on in our ranking. So you can easily do that when you go into the, you know, we looked at the expert consensus rankings. I compared my rankings to Bobby, and I've picked out at each position the various players that we are furthest apart on. So it's going to be very civil, of course, because we're very close. But in the end, we're going to be talking about players that we disagree on and sort of see whether or not one of us can kind of convince the other to move him up or down our rankings respectively.
There's a couple of these players, man. It's not going to happen. There's no way you're moving me down. There's no way you're talking me into some of your guys. It's going to be a lot of fun, though. Basically, we're going to be yelling at each other the whole time, right?
Well, I mean, you know, civilly, but yes, but I will be honest, when we get there and you'll know, I'd be like, oh man, I really like this guy. I really don't want to have to defend why I'm lower on him than Bobby, but you know, sometimes you're just really going after a guy, and I've looked at my rankings and I'm like, I just can't push him further up. So yeah, it's going to be fun. And it look, things like this are good not only for listeners and for people, you know, who are consuming fantasy content, but also for us. I hear you say it all the time. You know, you talk to Nick Pollock and guys like that. Obviously, everybody has great insight. We talk to experts all across the industry. Everybody brings their own perspective. They give great insight, and they do make you kind of reevaluate some players. Even when we've been doing this for months, getting ready, it's a good chance for us and for the listeners to really kind of think about where exactly we have each of these players ranked.
There are 600 fantasy relevant players. There's going to be disagreement on dozens of them with no matter what analyst you're talking to. This is a healthy exercise. Although I do want to note, you will be yelling at a very sick person who you made sick.
It's true. I will take responsibility for that. But, you know, I'm your boss. I can do what I want. This is my endless cosmic power over here.
Hey, Dan, do you want a signed Fernando Tatis baseball bat?
Yes, I would.
Okay, well, you can't have it because it's for one of our lucky listeners. We've got a contest going on. If you guys want to win this bad boy, it's a real signed full-size Fernando Tatis Jr. baseball bat. You can check out the details at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. Here's what we're looking for, though. It doesn't take long to enter. All you need to do, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and just leave an honest review. Any feedback, positive or negative, we appreciate it. We're going to look at every single one of them. We want to make the podcast better. We want to know what you guys think we're doing well. We just want to hear from you guys. Take a screenshot of that review. Send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. Again, you can check out the details for the signed Fernando Tatis bat at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. All right, Dan, let's get right into it, man. We're going to go position by position here. And we're starting with Yadier Molina. Okay, so I've got him up at number 9 in my rankings. You've got him down at number 19. Do you think I'm a biased Cardinals fan, or are you just extremely low on Molina?
I think it's the latter. First of all, I've listened to you enough. Sometimes you are trashing the Cards, man. Like, I get it. You are.
Oh man, I hate them.
No, I know. Sometimes you're, you know, you have great insight into them, and I really like listening to your take, especially on some of the deeper guys. But I don't really find you as like the biased guy. I don't know. I don't off the top of my head where the expert consensus ranking has him. Mike,
number 12. I'm taking a look right now. He's catcher 12. So I'm 3 spots higher. You're 6 lower.
Correct. So I'm really the guy who's way off here. And really, it's just kind of the fact that this dude is 38 years old this year. He's got an incredible amount of mileage. And look, good for him, right? He is able to still be a very productive catcher about 6 or 7 years after almost every other catcher kind of falls off a cliff, right? But look, at some point, the ride's going to end, and I'd kind of rather be off the ride a year too early than a year too late. And you think about it, look, he hits for a decent batting average. He still somehow chips in some steals, but he hit 10 home runs last year. I know he missed time, but every catcher kind of missed time. He hit 10 home runs last year. That was 32nd among catchers. Like, he's just not going to give you much there. I just don't think that the downside is worth rostering him in one catcher leagues. And again, I don't have like super strong feelings about this when you get there. I mean, guys I have ahead of me.
Really, what's the difference between like catcher 8 and catcher 20?
That's exactly correct. I really want to write an article that just says all your catchers stink, because really when you get outside of the top 4 or
except Salvador Perez and Wilson Ramos, man. And I think you agree with me on those two, right?
I do. Yeah, no, I...
Those are the two guys I want to draft.
Actually, I think I wrote, you know, who's the one of the guys that you wind up drafting whenever it was a catcher thing, just a featured pros thing. And it's Ramos, because I don't know where he was going, 180th or something in ADP. And, you know, I get that he's 32 at this point, but he's, you know, had, you know, with the batting average and the home runs, and, you know, he's still doing well batting in the middle of a good lineup. For Molina, for me, honestly, at this point, look, I'd rather take my chance on Danny Jansen, was having the big spring. That's just me personally.
He's a really good hitter, but he's not Yadier Molina.
And I don't want to take away anything from Yadi. He's a great player. He's been a great player forever. And if I wound up with him as my catcher, I really wouldn't care that much. You know, it's not like that big a difference between him and Tom Murphy or whoever I have just outside the catcher one. But for me, I look, 38 years old, man, to get me to take a 38-year-old catcher in a one catcher league, it's probably not going to happen.
So I totally get that. First of all, we're not supposed to agree, so no talking about Wilson Ramos, even though I'm the one that brought him up. So what is it about the age? Do you think his production is going to drop off? He kind of already has. He's still hitting for batting average. I mean, every year he bats 270, 300, 280. The home runs have dropped off. He's still second in Major League Baseball for steals among catchers.
The steals thing is just mind-boggling to me. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, you look at it, right? It's like, and you think about, you know, he stole the last 3 years, 9, 4, and 6. And you're like, well, what? That's a catcher, dude. Like, anything you get from a catcher is incredible. For me, like, it was only 113 games last year. That's the lowest he's played since 2014. Eventually, you can't catch as many games as this guy has caught and be 38 years old. And just think that this is going to happen. And to be clear, he's 37 right now. This is age 38 season. He's going to turn it in July.
Wow, liar.
What? His age 38 season. But look, in the end, if you took Yadi as your catcher one, I really wouldn't care. If you were like, nah, man, I have him 12th, you have him 19th. It doesn't matter to me the difference between 12 and 19.
Yeah, well, I'm going to fight you on Yadier Molina here in just a second. But first, I just want to remind people, I had this poll out. You know, nobody knows what the mysterious Dan Harris looks like. What do y'all think that he looks like? And the winning vote, Dan, was a skinny Hagrid.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes, that is exactly accurate. that was coined by a close friend of mine who at our fantasy auction, we do one in person every year, and I just hadn't shaved for a while. I don't know, you know, and I am extremely tall, and I have, you know, like 0.01% muscle mass, so I'm just very, very skinny, and I had like a big beard, and, you know, I was the auctioneer, and he was yelling at me for taking too long, and he just called me skinny Hagrid. And I thought that that was accurate. And, you know, one day I will let people see what I look like. Yeah, it's pretty accurate. Those people who voted for that, well done. You've nailed it.
39.1% voted skinny Hagrid.
We have the smartest listeners, as you know.
22% voted Joe Burrow plus 10 years. 21.4% voted blonde Jason Seahorn, so basically a total hunk.
Wow.
And I don't know why this one finished last, Dan. I guess people don't think that you're jacked. 17.1% said Josh Hader clone and jacked.
Yeah, I mean, the Josh Hader clone, maybe, because he's like really skinny. I could go with the long hair if we absolutely had to, but the jacked, I think everybody knows. I think it's just my voice emanates, you know, very little muscle mass or something like that. But it's accurate. I'm very proud of our listeners. You know, they really know what they're doing.
Is the skinny part actually going to stick around? Because I saw your freezer and it is loaded with ice cream.
So, yes, my wife loves ice cream more than she loves anything else. That includes me and our children and our dog. So ice cream is a thing. And look, when Dairy Queen is running a buy one, get one 80 cents at, you know, for blizzards, she is going to go three times a day and just stock up. So, yeah, we've got like 25 Royal Reese's Brownie Blizzards medium.
Oh, that's what she chooses, Aaron. Oh, come on.
Don't mess with Aaron, dude. If you mess with her ice cream, she will destroy you. And I'm not kidding. I mean, she would have ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm not kidding. Now, look, the good news about it is we may have 25, but she's going to eat all of them herself. So I am just going to be able to stay as skinny as I am right now. So I'm all set.
All right. All the restaurants are closed in Illinois. That's a bummer. Anyway, Yadier Molina. So you're worried about his production dropping off. He had 20 home runs in 2018, 10 in 2019. It already dropped off. His batting average was .307, dropped to .270. Each of the last 12 seasons, he has 450-plus plate appearances. Only eight catchers last year, Dan, had 450 plate appearances. He's virtually guaranteed to be one of the top eight catchers in plate appearances, which means probably top 10 in RBIs, probably top 10 in runs. He's batting in the middle of the Cardinals lineup, probably top 5 in stolen bases. Okay, the power is not there, but his batting average is consistently .270, .280, .290, .300. And if that's the case, the average batting average for a catcher that we're going to draft is going to be .240 compared to the average of .270 for most hitters. It's a 30-point swing. Basically, this is a .300 hitter.
I don't really care that much about, like, if you drafted him to be your catcher one, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. He's not that big a difference, even though I have him down at 19. But again, for me, look, here's the deal. We do this all the time with hitters, right? We discount Nelson Cruz. If you just looked at Nelson Cruz's numbers, you'd be like, holy cow, this is incredible. But the guy is 39, so you're sort of like, well, the ride is going to stop eventually. And for a catcher, this is nearly unprecedented to be this productive at age 38. And again, you did mention it. It is with the power. He did have the eighth most plate appearances, but again, he was 32nd in home runs. So I get home runs aren't everything. The average helps. But for me, look, I'd just rather be a year too early. I'd rather take my chance on some upside.
So I've got a trivia question for you, and I'm springing this on you right now. Number one fantasy catcher is JT Realmuto. Everyone knows that. Number two, Yasmani Grandal. Everyone knows that. Who was number three last year?
Oh, no, you must be kidding. I'm trying to think of... Please tell me it's not. Please tell me it's not. Is it Christian Vasquez?
Gary Sanchez was number four. It is Christian Vasquez. Yes. It's your guy that you've got ranked number 12. Dan, why do you have him so low?
Where do you have him?
I've got him 18, man.
Yeah, see, I knew that, to be fair, I never would have guessed Vasquez, except for the fact that I knew he was one of the players that had him way higher than you.
He was great last year, dude. He had 23 bombs, batted .276. In fact, he almost had as many steals as Yachty.
Okay, if I were to write an article that said all your catchers stink, Christian Vasquez would be like the poster child because he is my number 12. And yeah, he had an amazing season last year. He hit 23 home runs. I don't love Christian Vasquez. I have no shares of him in any of my leagues or anything like that. But again,
he's not a bad catcher to draft if you need a catcher at the end of draft.
He's still batting in an incredibly strong lineup, even without Mookie Betts, right? He's still batting there. He'll probably bat seventh. He'll have plenty of RBI opportunities. Even if he takes a 30% dip in home runs, he's still going to be around 15. He's in a good park. He's in, with the lineup. But again, the difference between a guy like Christian Vasquez and a guy like Yachty, who I have 12th and 19th, is infinitesimal. Like, it really is not a big deal. You know what I mean? I'm looking at the guys I have below Vasquez in between them. Tom Murphy, Jorge Alfaro, Travis d'Arnaud, Sean Murphy, Danny Jansen, Buster Posey. I don't care.
Tom Murphy, dude. Yeah.
It's really just something where any of these guys could easily outperform the rest. I don't really have strong feelings.
Three of them will be top 10 catchers and the rest of them will be outside the top 30. Like, that's just the way catcher happens.
And remember, a guy like Danny Jansen, everybody was really excited about last year. Then he completely fell off, and then he was having the huge spring, so he could be somebody.
He hits the crap out of the ball, too. Look at his underlying metrics. I've got Jansen above Christian Vasquez.
I have no problem with that, even though, and that's what I'm trying to say. I have no problem with that, even though I have Vasquez five spots ahead of Jansen. Like, it means really nothing to me. To me, look, if you want to go after catcher, that's fine. I almost always wait on catcher. For me, it's basically the top eight, and I know because I heard you talking about it. I don't know where you have Will Smith.
Ooh, I got Will Smith like 12. Yeah, actually, I'm writing him in my bus article. He was not great in the minor leagues.
You made a lot of really good points about him. But for me, you know, anywhere in the top seven, in the top eight, you know, with Realmuto, Sanchez, Grandal, Contreras, Mitch Garver, Wilson Ramos, Salvador Perez, that's good. If you want to put Smith in there, I'd be okay with it. But after that, whatever, man. I like guys like, you know, Narvaez. I like guys like Kelly. I would take a chance on Francisco Mejia. That guy's like that, but really, every catcher stinks. You know, just I just if I can't get one of the top guys, if I can't get Ramos late in the draft, then I just kind of wait, and because none of it matters.
I could definitely see Will Smith having a big season. Like, sure, okay, he did suck in the minor leagues, but didn't suck. He just wasn't great. People like that break out. JD Martinez is the prime example. Wasn't great, and then all of a sudden he was, and he stayed great. So that could be Will Smith. I'm not drafting him in that top tier, but I can't blame me for saying it. And I said that I've got him at Will Smith at 12. I've actually got him at 13 behind Molina. Let's move on to first base, however. We need to talk about Ryan McMahon. You've got him so much higher than I do. You've got him as, third baseman 21 versus my 35. He's also a first baseman, though, second baseman as well. We'll talk about another first baseman, but let's start with Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, okay, so again, I do, and Ryan McMahon on our site, because we take eligibility from all these other sites, is eligible every, you know, at first, second, and third. We are way different on him in each of the positions, so we could talk about him anywhere you want. First base, I'm 18th, you have him 32nd. Now, let's be clear, and this is actually something that's an interesting point. I don't know how you do your rankings, Bobby. Like, do you do them as where you expect them to finish at the end of the year, or do you do them more as draft rankings for, you know, if you're drafting, this is how I would rank them?
Entirely based on if I was drafting, this is how I would draft them. And then right before the accuracy contest, I'll change it to where do I expect them to finish.
Okay, I love that.
After everyone's done their drafts and I can't screw it up for anyone.
No, I love that style. That's really, really good, actually. That's a good idea. Yeah, I do it.
Don't tell anyone I said that, though.
No, but that's a good way to do it. Because that really, I mean, yeah, look, because if you would do it how you would draft and then you wound up switching it at the end to for however you actually think they'd...
Yeah, then we'd have Josh James in like the top 20 starting pitchers. And
But that's still fine because you're still making your calls. And if you're making your calls, your draft rankings are the same way. Right, I draft basically exactly... I mean, I don't switch them at the end, but I do it for sort of draft rankings, everything like that. And for me, there's a couple things. Number one, I take into account the fact that McMahon is eligible all over the diamond, right? Because that has more value than where I just think his numbers are going to be. So the fact that he's eligible, at least on our site, first, second, third, that's really, really valuable when you're dealing with a season-long league where you're going to need to be able to fill in. So for me, A, that bumps his value up a little bit. Second, I'm kind of just a McMahon believer. I get that the Rockies have...
He's good, man. If he plays, he's good.
And they have a ton of options, I understand. And, you know, where's Garrett Hampson going to play? We may talk about him later, too. But, you know, you had that report earlier in the spring, and this is what started pushing him up a little bit for me. You had that report earlier in the spring that Bud Black expected him to play 150 games this year, right? So right out of the gate, he was just basically like, this is my guy. He had a roller coaster year last year. I was a little surprised when I was first doing my rankings, I was looking into it, that he still hit 24 home runs. He was top 10% in the league in average exit velocity. He's a career 297 hitter with an 877 OPS in the minors. He's a legitimate...
He's good. He steals, too.
Right. And look, at second base in particular, and that's kind of really what does it. We're talking about him where he ranks at first base. And again, a lot of that is because you can play him at second base. So when I'm doing my draft rankings, I'm not just saying, you know, it's basically where I would take him with all that. Second base is like the one position other than...
You would draft him over Eric Hosmer, but to play at second base. If he was a first baseman only...
No, I'd still draft him over Hosmer. I'll be honest. I would. I think... A couple of things. Number one, and I have kind of, for whatever reason, a very specific view of how I see the Rockies playing time playing out, which is crazy because nobody should, because they have a million players and it's all over the place and they did everything. But I think that McMahon, he's going to have the everyday second base job. I think that he's, you know, if Murphy gets injured, he's going to just slide over to first base. I think if Arenado gets traded at some point, he's going to be able to slide over to third base if necessary. I just think, especially Bud Black, basically when you playing times have to battle with these guys, when he comes out and he says, I think that this guy is going to play every day, I could see pretty easily a guy in the thin air that's going to hit 30 bombs. So if he was just first base, where would I have him?
See, you're changing my mind on this one. You're doing it. But there's another one. Garrett Hampson, you've got 7 spots higher than me. Now you're changing my mind on Garrett Hampson the other way. I'm moving him down from 27.
Okay, you want to switch to Hampson then here for a second, even though he's second base?
Yeah, let's talk about them both at the same time.
All right, so let's get there. Okay, so I expect McMahon to be the everyday second baseman. Okay, now I do foresee the possibility of Murphy, who's getting older, getting injured. Again, spots open for him. But here's what I kind of think with Hampson. And again, there is another guy, and he's late. We may not talk about him, but I've drafted Sam Hilliard everywhere. I don't know if he's going to win the left field job.
I don't care, man. If there's a 20% chance he wins the job, I'm drafting him in the last round.
Right, exactly. He is a kind of, you know, a little bit of a late bloomer and everything like that, but he has consistently offered you a great combination of power and speed, so that's that. But let's assume he wins the left field job. McMahon's going to be the second baseman. Hampson's left out, right? Because there's just no room, except, you know, obviously, one of the things about the Rockies is they got a lot of injury risk. David Dahl has never played a full season. But the way I view Hampson is kind of the way I view Tommy Edman, and I think I'm probably higher on Edman. I don't think we'll talk about him today, but...
Yeah, you are higher on Edman. I'm low on Edman.
Even if you don't have a set role, a guy like Hampson is going to be able to fill in everywhere. He can pretty much play everywhere. He can play second base. He can play left field. He can fill in anywhere. Career 311 hitters in the minors. He's hit above 300 at every single level. And yeah, he had a rough year last year, but he had 5 homers and 9 steals in September with stolen bases at a premium. He's a guy, again, this is the thing with stolen bases. They have not only, like, I went back and I checked, and I think if you go back to every season since 1973 that wasn't strike shortened, the last 4 years and in successive order have been the lowest stolen base totals since then. Every year has declined, and last year then was the lowest stolen base total by far, I believe, since 1973 that was not strike shortened. Stolen bases are at an absolute premium, and I think that's part of how I look at a lot of the guys that I have up a little higher than you probably. It's because I so heavily value steal. So for Hampson, he's got the speed. It's really about his playing time. But I think that Hampson is very talented. I like what he can do. I'm encouraged by his September. I think even if he doesn't win an everyday job, I think he's going to play the super utility role where he's going to play 4 or 5 times a week. There's going to be injuries. Dahl is never healthy. Murphy is getting up there in age. I think there'll be enough at bats for him to really come in there and steal 30 bases pretty easily. He's got elite speed. So that's a little bit why. So for me, Ryan McMahon, I like for not only the position flexibility, I do think he wins a second base job and plays pretty much every day. I think he's going to have a very, very solid year in the thin air. And I think Hampson plays that super utility role. He gets enough at bats with his speed and batting average to matter.
So Dan, I'm looking right now at the Fantasy Pros expert accuracy. We both finished in the top half out of 64, but you finished number one at ranking second baseman last year. So should I just trust whatever you say about Garrett Hampson and Ryan McMahon?
Yes, I have a very unique insight into all second basemen. Yeah, no, it was funny because I looked at that too and I was like, wow, all right, I don't know what I did. Yeah, I think I finished 17th overall or something. But
you must have been really high on DJ LeMahieu because I wasn't.
I don't think I was. I honestly don't remember. The only thing I remember about last year is how incredibly high I was on Chris Archer and how bad that worked out. And that's really the one that was like my plant the flag guy. I was like, who's the highest on Chris Archer? I bet you I can get him there. I couldn't, but I went way too high on that. I don't think I have any specific insight into second baseman or anything like that. I did play it in my third year in Little League, but I don't think that really carries over. I would not trust me specifically there. But I do think that both these,
they put a super tall kid at second base.
I was a late bloomer, buddy. When I was little, I did not make it there. I was, you know, just sort of a regular kid. It was basically also the place where I could do the least damage to my team. They're like, lefties don't really pull. You know, it's a short throw. You'll be fine.
Yeah, if you're in right field and they hit you a ground ball, it could be a homer.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I was basically, my entire sports career was based around placing me where I could do the least damage to my team in every sport. But yeah, look, in the end, what I really just think is these guys are both going to play enough to have a lot of value. So I'm fine with going there. If McMahon was just first base, I'd have to certainly reassess. He wouldn't be where he is now. But the multi-position eligibility, specifically at second, makes a difference.
If that's true, if McMahon plays that much, if Hampson plays that much, I'm way low on them. Because they're gonna exceed even what you've got them ranked as if they do play that much. So you are calculating in the risk. I just think there's a little bit more risk. That's our disagreement. What about Starlin Castro? You've got him at 25 among second basemen. Got him at 17.
You know, I listened to you talk. I don't remember who it was. You've been doing, the pods have been great, by the way. And I'm not just saying that as somebody who works here. I've been listening to them, you know, when I've been able to get out of the house and walk the dog at all for my alone time where my kids aren't all over the place. I really like Castro. And I'm just like, man, I cannot believe that I'm so low on him.
By the way, you're higher on ECR than Castro. ECR is 26. So maybe we shouldn't even argue about this one.
No. We should, because, again, you made some great points. I think it might have been with Joe Pisapia, which was a great show also. Look, Castro's great. He had a great year last year. He's got a great history in Nationals Park. I think for me, it's just kind of like, okay, he kind of lacks the upside a little bit of some of the other guys for me. I keep thinking about, like, where can I push him? I mean, since 2014, right? You go back since 2014. His best season, you took his single best total from any of the years, 22 homers, 76 runs, 86 RBI, and 6 steals. All right, it's not like blowing you away. He doesn't walk. He's turning 30. I like him. I want to keep pushing him up. He's going to bat right in the middle of that Nationals order. That's a great spot to be, but... You know, I could see him pushing him up probably to 23, something like that. But I'm not going to, honestly, I'll prefer Scott Kingery over him. I prefer Brandon Lau. I'm taking Edmund.
Ooh, Brandon Lau. Okay, we'll need to talk about him in a moment. I like Scott Kingery a lot.
Yeah, I like King. I mean, I could see him pushing him past, you know, Kevin Newman, Colton Wong. Like, he's right around there. For me, it's just, I don't know, man. He's going to be good. I really would feel confident. I just missed him in TGFBI. He was taking like a pick or two before me. I was really excited to get him there. But, you know, I don't know. It's just the lack of sort of, you know, the best case scenario isn't really where I want it to be.
So he's moving from Miami, the worst park for right-handed hitters, to Washington. It's not a bad park at all for right-handed hitters. He's also moving from the worst lineup in baseball to a pretty dang good lineup. They just won the World Series. He had 86 RBIs last year. Do you think he gets worse or better this year?
So I think his homers are going to go down, and it's obviously he's to a better park, but I don't know about you. I'm all in on the lack of juice ball thing going on. Like, I think they've changed the balls back. I think you've heard about it from guys like Tanaka, who's like, ooh, look, I can throw my splitter again because the seams are raised. So I think the 22 home runs, which again, where's he's not a year before, he hit 12. Year before that, even, you know, in Yankee Stadium, only in 112 games, he hit 16. I think in realistically, he's more like an 18 homer type of guy.
Sure. So like Jeff McNeil goes down from 23 as well. Jose Altuve goes down from 31. All the second basemen are going to drop some.
No, that is true. But again, he stole, you know, two of the last three seasons, he's stolen two bases. Like, it's just, you know, and again, and I think that's part of where I am at this point. If you contribute, like, again, I compared him, I have, and it's somebody who I've debated not long because they're down at, you know, 24, 25, Colton Wong, right? Like, I, you know, Wong's fine, but he's going to chip in.
Wong was good last year.
Yeah, he's going to chip in those steals, right? I mean, that's part of the thing that's going on.
He had 24 steals and he...
Yeah, I mean, Wong had a really quietly really good year last year.
He just only had 478 at-bats.
Well, I mean, they would sit him sometimes against updates. He was also battling, like, random kind of minor injuries that they would... But again, you know, with Castro, it just... Yeah, I could see him, you know, again, I probably top out at 20 homers, but he'll have RBI. I doubt he steals. He's going to bat in the middle of the lineup, which is great, but I doubt he steals.
About the same as he performed last year, maybe drop.
Yeah, you were probably asking a very specific question, so I would be like, yeah, he'll probably be the same, so you could go ahead and give me your stat.
Starlin Castro was the number 12 fantasy second baseman last year. He was good.
This is sort of one of the things where I was like, oh God, I'm going to have to talk negatively about Starlin Castro, which I really don't want to do. Look, in the end, you've got guys like, you know, I think you've got guys who, at least, you know, with our stuff, like Danny Santana now, it's second base eligible when at some sites, which is why he's on there. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Kevin Biggio, like Gavin Lux, you know, who could be up and down. You've got guys who are going to play the full season right now who I feel like are going to finish higher than that. That's really, in the end, where I come out on them.
Oh, man, you just named a lot of guys I really like. I'm not sure who I would draft if it came down to some of them. Talk about Brandon Lau, though. He was really good last year in 296 at-bats.
Yeah, and again, this is not something where I would go crazy if you were like, I'm sorry, I've got Castro over Lau. I can't do it. That's totally fine. He's projected to bat leadoff this year, though, right? I mean, that's where Roster Resource has him. That's everything I sort of saw was he's going to bat leadoff. So that's obviously a great spot. He had basically half a season last year, 270, 17 homers, and 5 steals. He did outperform his expected stats. You know, I understand. But, you know, that sort of stuff is ways for us to analyze. You know, we look at a lot of guys who are like, whoa, his expected batting average, his expected slugging percentage was, you know, way lower than his actual numbers. I get it. That's true. Certain guys do just outperform their numbers. I think of Eduardo Escobar, who constantly outperforms his numbers. But in the end, with Lau, he's got legitimate power. He'll throw in a little bit of speed. I mean, if he basically played half a season, you don't want to prorate everyone's numbers because that's not the way life works. But if you did, he'd obviously essentially have 35 homers and 10 steals. That's crazy. He's got a decent batting average. I believe it was 270 last year, so he's not going to hurt you there. And that was the same as Castro, I believe. And again, leading off for the Rays, a good lineup. He'll score a ton of runs. So for me, and there's upside with Lau that I don't think really exists with Castro. So that's for me. Again, that's not a huge thing. If you, I have Lau 22nd and Castro 25th. So not crazy. But for me, yeah, I prefer Lau in that situation.
So Lau wasn't any kind of prospect, really. But in AAA, he did bat 304 with a 994 OPS. The year before that, in AA, he batted 297 with a 949 OPS. You know, 54 extra base hits in 100 games. It's a quality hitter. Sometimes guys just aren't prospects, but they come up to the big leagues and they're just hitters, so they hit. He's in a good lineup. I am moving him up my rankings a little bit now that I realize he's going to bat the leadoff for the Rays. It's a good call. It's just, you know, how far can I move him up? Because, like, do you have him over Jonathan Scope? Do you have him over Daniel Murphy, Cesar Hernandez?
Yep, I have him over all those guys. And not by a crazy amount. And I like Murph this year a lot. And again, Murph really shouldn't, you know, I know he is at some sites, which is why he is on our, he shouldn't be second base eligible at this point. You know, he basically just plays first base. But yeah, I do. And Scope is fine. You know,
Scope's going to hit 20, 25 home runs as always, but Lau might too.
Yeah, he's not going to help your batting average, of course. I mean, that's the thing. You mentioned it. I mean, he had 82 games, 327 plate appearances, 17 home runs last year. And there was, you know, he struck out a crazy amount, right? Nearly 35%.
He plays for the Tigers. So, like, how many RBIs can he have? Like, 20?
And the bottom line is with Lau, especially, is remember, the Rays are one of the sharpest organizations. You talk about it often, you know. They gave him that six-year, $24 million deal, right? They gave him that deal because they said, we believe in you. We want you up here. And when they do that, it kind of makes me say, okay, Rays, if you believe in a guy, I probably should believe in a guy. And that's sort of part of it as well. I think there's untapped potential here. And again, yeah, his minor league career is not overly impressive. It's not bad, but it's not overly impressive. But again, the Rays believe in him. They obviously want to give him the opportunity. And when I went back and I started doing my rankings and I started looking at all the data, I was actually surprised at how solid. I mean, if you would have said, what did Brandon Lau do last year? I would have said, he probably batted, 250 or something like that? A 270 batting average. That's not going to hurt you. Again, outperformed his expected stats. But, you know, for me, there's upside there. The Rays believe in him. He's supposed to bat leadoff. You know, that's probably fluid, but it's enough for me to believe in him.
All right, man, you did it. I moved him up in my rankings. I moved him up just behind Rougned Odor.
That's fine. That's good. I'm all about that. That's okay. I'm higher than Odor, but, you know, I'll take that.
All right, you ready for the fight to the death? Third base, Johan Moncada face Matt Chapman. Why do you like Matt Chapman better than Moncada?
Oh, man, I don't really want to have to talk bad about Moncada, but I'm going to. Okay, here's the deal. First of all, where do we have them and where do you have them?
It's really not that far, but this is the biggest fight for third baseman we had. Moncada, I've got it 10, you've got it 14. Chapman, I've got it 15, you've got at 11.
No, this is, though, a good way to frame it. It'd be like, why would I take it? Okay.
So Moncada, by the way, ADP 75, ECR 55. For those of you who don't know, ADP is average draft position, so where the general public's taking him. ECR is the expert consensus ranking, so where the experts combine are ranking him. They've got him at 55, whereas Matt Chapman, let's see where they've got him, 82, ADP 89. So it's 2.5 rounds, Dan.
Yeah, no, I mean, I look, and this is fair. And honestly, I was surprised when I saw where, you know, I don't know if you ever get like that, Bobby, where you're sort of taking a look at stuff or somebody will point something out to you, be like, wow, I have that guy lower than I thought. You know, I didn't really realize that. You know, we take care to do our rankings, but sometimes you forget exactly where you have guys. Look, in the end, it's possible Moncada will continue to move up. I look at third base. There's so many guys I like. We're talking about him versus Chapman specifically. So let's talk about Moncada for a second. The criticism of my ranking of Moncada at 14th at third base, totally fair. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, he batted 277 with four home runs.
With a 400 BABIP.
No, I'm not even talking about last year. Let's go far. But yes, the BABIP is where I'm getting to. Absolutely correct.
Okay.
277 with four home runs in 101 games in Cuba. 288 with 37 home runs over 272 games in the minors. So this is not a guy who was like, hey, man, look at me. I'm a 30 power, you know, type of guy right here. So I don't necessarily know that we're talking about a 315 hitter who's going to hit 30 homers at this point, like he kind of suggested he would if he wasn't injured last year. Again, the ball's going back to normal. I think that, you know, his power is going to regress a little bit. And again, you mentioned it, the abnormally high BABIP last year. He is a high BABIP hitter, just to be clear. Like, he's not a guy who you can be like, well, you know, you should have like a 300 BABIP or something like that. No, he's going to be a mid-350s BABIP last year. But yeah, last year it was over four. It was one of the highest in the league. And he, again, he'll be a high BABIP hitter. I think he was one of the higher BABIP hitters in 2018 as well. Not that high. It was abnormally high. He had this very bizarre low infield fly ball rate for him. It was like 5% or something like that, which is way lower than what he usually does. So I think the average is probably going to come down. I don't really see the growth in the power. And I don't think the White Sox want him to run a ton. I think he could easily steal 25 bases if he wanted to, but I just don't really see that happening. I don't think that's what the White Sox are really going to be desperate to do this year. They've got a loaded lineup. I think they're going to play it a little more conservatively. So for me, I don't think that we're like, wow, look at this guy. He's going to hit 315. He's going to hit 30 home runs. You give him a full season, 315, 30 home runs, 15. I'm more thinking like more like a 280 type of guy, a guy who's going to hit 20 to 25 homers and a guy who's probably going to steal 10 bases. There's value in that. For Chapman, I love Matt Chapman. I might have a blind spot for Matt Chapman, okay? So I get it. Look, 36 homers, 102 runs, 91 RBIs. He batted just .249, but all of that batting average decline, and basically his production really fell off in the second half, and really September, just .178. He claims that he struggled against elevated fastballs and off-speed pitches, and he's worked on his mechanics. I don't really see that too much in the data. I mean, he batted .266 against off-speed pitches. That's better than what his overall average was. But for much of the year, he was basically a .270 hitter who was easily on pace for 40 homers and 110 runs in RBIs. So top 4% in the league in average exit velocity. For me, I see kind of more continued growth with Chapman. I think if he stays healthy for a full year, it's a 40-homer guy. And so for me, look,
he's one of the best players in baseball, man. If he wins MVP this year, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, defensively also, he's elite. That doesn't matter for fantasy, but he is one of the best players in baseball. But again, this kind of goes a little bit to repeat the catcher point, okay? So I realize I do have him pretty far, actually, in when I'm breaking down the overall, and I think that's fair, and I should take another look at that. But again, the difference between Matt Chapman at 11, then you've got, for me, Max Muncy, who, again, part of it is eligible everywhere. DJ LeMahieu, eligible everywhere. If not, Matt Chapman and Yoan Moncada would probably be back-to-back in my third base rankings, right? Because you'll play Muncy at second, and you'll play LeMahieu at some other position, probably other than third, if you could. So for me, they're not that far apart. But in the end, yeah, I think it's fair criticism to say, what are you doing having Chapman over than Moncada? I think really for me, it's that I don't see the growth in Moncada that I bet a lot of other people are banking on.
So this is what I see in Moncada. He went from a 33.4% K rate in 2018 to 27.5%. That's a big drop. He also went from a 44% hard hit rate to 48. He went from 90 exit velocity to 93. You look at the average exit velocity leaderboard. We've got Judge at 1, Sano, Nelson Cruz, Franmil, Christian Yelich, Donaldson, and then Moncada, number 7. Kid crushes the ball.
Yeah, no, he had a great year last year, and it was actually a change of approach because you notice not only did his strikeout percentage drop, but his walk rate dropped a lot too. And he talked about it before the season that he was like, yeah, I was being too selective. I was waiting too long, and I was getting myself in these horrible counts. And sometimes it would work out for a walk, but a lot of times it was just a strikeout. So he was being a little more aggressive last year. I love Moncada. He's a great, great player. The first buy I ever made on Pristine Auction was a Yoan Moncada signed jersey. So I'm really all about him. But I think it's more about me being bullish on Chapman than I am bearish, you know, on Moncada.
I think Moncada's going too high, by the way. Up at pick 55 is where the experts are recommending him. I've actually got him as an avoid in my rankings. I've got him higher than Matt Chapman, so we had to talk about it. We need to go shortstop now. Let me see. Let's pick out some shortstops. This is the one I want to fight on. Bo Bichette. You've got him number 11. I've got him number 16. So I've got him one spot away from Eduardo Escobar, who I have at 17. You've got him at 23.
Yeah, you know, again, this is going to kind of go down again to my love of the steals. Look, if you had to project him, he's probably at least a borderline 2020 guy, right? Wouldn't you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he had 11 homers, 4 steals last year in 196 at bats. So you prorate that out to a full season, we're looking at 30-12.
Yeah, and I think, again, he's, you know, he was stealing in the minors his whole career. He's going to be batting leadoff, probably. I think he probably runs a little bit more as he gets a little... He's going to be close to there anyway. And I think as a good bet for 2020, look, nine players did that last year. Nine in the all of the game. It's just something that's kind of rare. I understand his expected batting average was much lower. This is just, I'm kind of all in here on this, you know, top of the Rays lineup. I like Biggio. I think Vladdy is going to really take a step forward. He's in, obviously, this perfect home park. He's batting leadoff all season. It's not anything, you know, there's no like, oh, well, here's what I'm going to point to show you why Bo Bichette is going to have this crazy breakout.
You're not that high on him. You've got him at 11. ECR has him at 12.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I'm not crazy. It's really, why don't you defend your low ranking then on Bo Bichette, buddy?
Bo Bichette was one of the most lucky hitters in baseball last year, according to Baseball Savant. His quality of contact, you guys have heard me talk about this a lot. There's a lot of new listeners, though, so I'll explain it one more time. So quality of contact measures your exit velocity and your launch angle, and it says, okay, if it's hit at 15 degrees and 90 miles per hour, what percentage of the time is it a single, double, triple, homer, out? And then it gives you your expected stats when it compiles all of your batted ball data together. And so we can see some of these small sample sizes, 196 at-bats. Bo Bichette was extremely lucky in those at-bats. His batting average, his power should have both been much lower than they actually were. Now, he's going to get better because he's a prospect. That's what prospects do. But I don't think the 30 home run pace, 311 batting average, either is even close to sustainable. I think he hits 20 homers. He steals a dozen, 15 bags. He bats 270. That's quality. That's not someone I want to draft in the top 60 picks.
No, I think that's fair. I think, especially at a deep position, right? Shortstop is really the position where you can wait as long as you want.
Right. I mean, that's about what Colton Wong's probably going to do if he stays healthy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, part of it is you not only draft for what you project, and this is where it gets a little iffy when people start talking about, well, what are their projections? That's a huge part of it. I am a big projection guy. But I think with a guy like Bichette, you also have to think about what is their upside for it, right? I mean, he stole 32 bases in AA in 2018, which I saw a lot because that's right by where I live in the Manchester Fisher Cats AA for the Blue Jays. He has the potential to easily pop off a 25-30 steal season if he decides. Stolen bases are a lot about what you feel comfortable doing and how much you want to run. He could easily pop off more.
Manny Machado goes from 0 to 15 every other year.
Exactly. It's really about, do I want to steal bases this year or don't I? You know, we'll see. I mean, Whit Merrifield talked about it like crazy last year. He's like, yeah, I just didn't really want to steal anymore, so he just didn't. I could see Bichette being at the top of the lineup, wanting to run. You know, Biggio takes, who's going to bat second, takes probably too many, but takes a ton of pitches, so he'll have plenty of chances to do. So I could easily see him getting to 25, maybe even 30 steals. And again, so you not only draft for the projections, but for the upside. And Bichette has basically as much upside as anybody else. So again, I'm not crazy high on him or anything like that. I don't think I'm going nuts with him. But when I look at it, you know, it's fine to sort of have him in that range. Again, where he is, Jonathan Villar, Manny Machado, Carlos Correa. It's for me, you know, I'll go a little bit more with the speed and the upside.
So you think he's a good source of home run, speed, batting average, run. So a lot like Tim Anderson, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so I'm not a big Anderson guy personally, but yes.
Anderson was the number 16 shortstop last year. He was behind Paul DeJong in fantasy.
Yeah. I get it. Again, I'm not, you know, all of these stuff you do look and be like, well, what? I mean, Anderson batted 335 last year. That's certainly not going to happen again or anything like that.
He also missed some time. He would have had more runs, RBIs, homers, stolen bases.
No, you're exactly right. If I knew Anderson was going to do this again, I'd probably have him higher also in my rankings. But again, part of it is what I think Bichette could do. And part of it is that, you know, what is it? The 10%, 15% chance that he just goes absolutely bonkers, right? And has a huge, again, he's playing in one of the best hitters parks in baseball. He's going to have a ton of protection behind him. So with the upside that he also has, you know, at 11th, I think that's a fair spot to take him.
All right, let's go two outfielders, two starting pitchers, and one relief pitcher to close the show. I see that you've got Shogo Akiyama 70 spots higher than me. So this is someone you're willing to draft in the last round as a flyer.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, this was our biggest. We were, you know, sort of joking about it. This was the one guy that was...
I'm not going to argue, though, because I could see it. I mean, it's the same thing with catcher between number 9 and number 20. Like, between outfielder number 55 and 130, it's the same.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I have him, like, 60th or something. Am I right? I'm not like, go get, you know, yeah. Akiyama or anything like that. But look, he's going to bat leadoff for the Reds, essentially, at least against...
Ooh, great lineup. Great ball.
Yeah, he's going to bat leadoff. Right. He's got 20, you know, if you look at his numbers as he came over, he's got 20 homer power in that park if everything goes right. He'll throw in 10 steals. He'll have a decent batting average, and, you know, he'll bat atop a decent lineup, you know? I mean, Votto still has something. Castellanos is there. Moustakas is there. Suarez is going to be healthy at this point, so he should score plenty of runs. So, you know, he's like the type of guy who's quietly, you're like, I'll just throw him in my last outfield spot. He won't hurt me. He'll chip in a little bit everywhere. So, yeah, he's a guy I'll go. But I'm certainly not here to be like, you must draft Shogo Akiyama, you know, or anything like that.
You think he plays every day in this crowded outfield? They've also got Jesse Winker.
Nick Senzel. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'll be honest. I really don't know exactly how this is going to break down. I mean, I think Aquino is probably going to go into the minors, is my guess, when everything starts. But
yeah, I'm not don't draft him, please.
No. He's sort of way off and stuff like that. But look, he's a lefty. I think he's going to start against righties and bat leadoff every time. And maybe he sits against all lefties. Maybe he sits against tough lefties. But
if he does, that's good for your batting average, though.
Yeah, no, that's also right. I mean, I think he's probably a guy who's going to bat in the mid-270s would be my guess. I think he'll go double digits in homers and, you know, he maybe double digits in steals, and I think he'll score a lot of runs. And, you know, especially if you're in a daily league where you can get him out against the lefties. But I think they'll probably let him, you know, see what he can do against a garden variety lefty at first before they start sitting him. So I think he'll get enough playing time to matter.
All right, here's our fight. You ready for this? We got Michael Brantley for me against Rhys Hoskins for you. You've got Rhys Hoskins at 23 among outfielders. I've got him at 32. I've got Michael Brantley at 29. You've got him at 37.
Okay. So I'm going to work on trying to change your mind on Rhys Hoskins. Now, you were down on Hoskins correctly last year, and I'll give you all the credit on that. I remember you basically being like, why are we wasting a pick on Rhys Hoskins?
I said he's the same as Miguel Sano, and people were furious at me.
It was a point that you and I disagreed on last year, and you were 100% right, so I will give you that. Here is why I'm in on Hoskins this year and why I'm basically drafting him everywhere. So, look, there you look at his career. It's a three-year decline in pretty much every stat, right? His batting average, where he was down to 226 or whatever it was last year, his slugging percentage, his homers, his WOBA, his WRC+, everything is on a three-year decline. That is bad. But here's what I did. You go back to his first 120 games last year, right? That's three quarters of a season, assuming he was healthy for the whole time. At that point in the season, three quarters of the way through, he had 24 homers and an 866 OPS. So what happened at the end of the season? He was hit on the hand by a pitch. I think he missed a game. He was out for a little bit. After that, five home runs and a 678 OPS. So I'm really willing to basically say that he was bothered by that hand injury and that he was never able to get right. And that is what really tanked. If he didn't, he'd basically finish with better numbers than he had the year before. He'd probably finish up in the, you know, above 30 home runs. His batting average would be lower, but passable. He's now entering his age 27 season. He still has the elite walk rate. So he's going to have a ton of runs scored. So for me, it's much more that when I look at his total numbers, I'm not writing off last year quite as much as I think most people are just based on those numbers. I'm willing to give him a little bit more of a pass because I think a lot of his dip in production was because of that hand injury that nobody really talked about. So, and he's made some adjustments this offseason as well. So I admit I'm high on him, but I'm getting Hoskins everywhere, and I think everybody should be too. So that's for me on Hoskins.
Yeah, he's in that great lineup, right? And we know he's someone who could hit 40 home runs. I've drafted Rhys Hoskins in a few leagues. I just like Michael Brantley a lot better. Like, at the price that Rhys Hoskins is going, you're getting a guy 109 who could drive in 120 runs. Like, would you guys like Jorge Soler? Same guy. Jorge Soler, Rhys Hoskins, same guy.
Really, it is dependent on whether or not you think, if you look at his numbers and you're just like, oh goodness, this is really terrible. I mean, you look at, you know, 259, 246, 226, 18 home runs in just 50 games when he started, 34, but then down to 29, right? Everything's sort of trending in that wrong direction. And if you looked at that, that would be fine if you're willing to say, God, if he's a 226 hitter. But he not only is the walk rate, again, the walk rate is so great, 17.5%, 13.2%, 16.5%. He's going to get on base all the time. He's going to score plenty of runs. I am more than willing to basically say, look, dude, you looked kind of like much more like the hitter I expected to see last year coming in until that hand injury. I'm willing to write off the last month and a half of the season, think he's going to get back there, and think there could be more growth because he's made adjustments. So I'm buying Hoskins. I'm all in on him this year.
All right, so what's your problem, man, with Michael Brantley?
Oh, I love it. Way to get the NFL podcast reference in. So here's the deal. Michael Brantley's batting average is great. I'm going to absolutely give you that. Batting average is a scarce category.
Over under 405.
Over under 405 for his batting average? 405, I'll go under on that, and I'll feel pretty confident in that.
I'm going under, too. I'm going to make some easy money.
All right. So, look, he's going to be 33. Okay. He had 22 home runs. That's a career high. He stole just three bases last year. He's top 90 runs once in his career. He's top 90 RBI once in his career. He's got an injury history. He's been healthy the last couple of seasons, but that's fine. To me, Brantley is a guy who's like, okay, he's going to kind of chip in, you know, a little bit all over here. He's not going to hurt you really anyway. I think that, again, the home runs, the 22 that he hit last year, I'm expecting to come down because I think the balls are going to change. And without that, you're like, okay, you're more of like a 15 homer guy who's going to be 85. You're not going to steal any bases anymore, assuming that he really is kind of...
He's David Dahl.
Yeah, he's just not a guy who I, you know, a guy whose big thing is batting average. I have a very, very difficult time spending a premium.
It's funny because I'm looking at all the guys we're different on, and it's all guys that either have a lot of steals and you like them more, or have a lot of batting average and I like them more.
And to be fair, there is no way I will criticize you for looking at batting average and being like, this is really an area I want to focus on. There are two categories that are really, really difficult to kind of fill in today's game. It's batting average and steals. We're looking at it a little bit differently. But again, for me, Brantley is so much more of a one-trick, not a one-trick pony, because he does contribute everywhere, essentially, except steals probably at this point. But again, he's getting up there in age. He doesn't have the greatest injury history. He's mainly a batting average guy. You know, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen now with the Astros and, you know, the lack of, but he's always hit for average, even with the Indians, obviously. So, look, I'm fine with it. It's just Brantley's not a guy I ever target. A guy who's almost certainly, there's no real upside with Brantley. And again, I'm a little probably more looking at upside when I'm drafting as well.
I think what it all comes down to is I'm drafting Mondesi in the fourth round and you're not. So I've got stolen bases and I need batting average. You don't have stolen bases. You do have batting average.
Hold on. I think all that is fair, except for the fact that, out of curiosity, Bobby, where do you have Mondesi in your overall rankings?
Oh, man, in the top 40?
How does 26 strike you, bud?
What? You've got him at 26?
Correct.
Oh, man, I've got him at 33.
Don't go telling me that I'm like, oh, I'm not drafted. I'm all over Adalberto Mondesi for sure.
Holy cow, dude.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Oh, yeah, because you like speeds. He's going to steal 90 bases, dude.
I love speed. We were talking about it when we were doing TGFBI, insert part of the channel. We were talking about, oh, where do you go with Mondesi? I'm like, I have Mondesi preposterously high. And I passed on him, to be fair. Part of, by the way, the reason that he's up is because since the season was postponed, I've kind of given guys who I had some injury concerns about a pretty big bump.
Yeah, like I moved Stanton up into my top 30 again.
100%, right? I completely agree with that. Yeah, me too. I'm 29 now, exactly. I think that's what you do with those guys. And for me, you know, Mondesi still had the shoulder concerns a little bit. You know, he was probably going to be ready for opening day. There was a little bit of that. Now at this point, I think, you know, he's just going to be up. And again, yeah, look, Mondesi could steal, you know, over a full season if he were fully healthy, 60 bags. If he could just get his on-base percentage a little bit up, he can win you that category, not necessarily hurt you in the other. So yeah, no, I love him too, but I like most guys with steals.
I'll say this about Mondesi. We can agree on one player here. I'll say this about Mondesi. If he steals 60 bases, and there's a chance he steals more than that, because he had 40 and he missed 60 games last year, and he had a 290 on-base percentage. If he steals 60 bags, that's one-third of what you need to win stolen bases. If you calculate one-third of what you need to win home runs, that's like a dude hitting 120 bombs.
I get reluctant to rely on guys like Mondesi, even though I have him really high and I've been drafting him where I can, because if he gets injured and you base your entire stolen base plan around that, then you're out of luck there. Because, you know, so I like to sort of have my team where this guy's going to steal 20, this guy's going to steal 20, this guy's going to steal 20. So if one of them gets injured, I can survive. But yeah, think about how we used to view Billy Hamilton, a guy who hit for absolutely no power whatsoever, who would really hurt your batting average and do all the sort of stuff. We were drafting him wherever we could. This is a guy who, even, you know, if he can get his on-base percentage up, but his batting average, you know, in his first year, 276, last year, 263, that does not hurt you. It doesn't hurt you in today's game, absolutely.
Might even hit 15 homers.
Yeah. Exactly right. That's plus at this point. And if he really does have the potential to easily steal 60 bags, yeah, man, I'm willing to risk it with Mondesi, and especially with the delay.
I love it, unless you take him in our Fantasy Pros Insider Draft.
Well, get ready.
We're going to play a game here, okay? So we've got a really great tool, Who Should I Draft, on Fantasy Pros, fantasypros.com/MLB/draft. And it's going to tell us who the experts recommend drafting between two guys or three guys. You can even put a fourth guy in there, and it's going to tell you what the percentage of experts would recommend. So we're going Rhys Hoskins face Michael Brantley to break the tie and name the winner of the greatest expert ever. Are you ready for this, Dan? I don't know what it's going to say. I could be wrong.
I'm ready.
I click the view advice button. And the answer, 31 out of 40 experts recommend Michael Brantley over Rhys Hoskins. Woo!
Boo. Boo. I cannot verify that that's true, by the way, so we don't know if you're making it up.
All right. Yeah, you can verify it, dude. FantasyPros.com/MLB/draft.
Stop poking holes in my defense, okay?
But for what it's worth, the ADP on Hoskins is higher. They were really close. I like Hoskins, man. I don't have a problem with drafting him at all. Let's go to the pitchers. And by the way, it's clear you guys are going to get some bonus content today. Bonus content for your quarantine or whatever's going on there.
This happens every time we're on the podcast, by the way. We just talk and talk and talk, and then we look up, it's an hour.
We haven't even talked in like months, man. Like, what are we supposed to do? Go under an hour? Come on.
You are correct. You are correct. Let's go.
Okay, you have a problem with Kenta Maeda and Robbie Ray. Oh, and Zach Greinke? What? Oh, we got to talk about all these guys. You've got Zach Greinke at number 23. I've got him at 11 among starting pitchers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the outlier. I'm Greinke. Let's make it clear. That's me. My bad. But look.
He wasn't good when he went to Houston last year.
It wasn't bad. He didn't strike any. He didn't get the Astros strikeout bump. I mean, you know, what about that part of it? His strikeout rate went down when he got to the Astros. Look, he's 36 years old. Okay, that at some point, again, you can see me starting to kind of view these guys who are getting up in age as, you know, I'm a little skeptical on them. His strikeout rate has dropped three straight seasons, as we just said, even more with the Astros. His velocity on his fastball is down to the 89 mile per hour range. That is just, I get he's a brilliant pitcher. I get he's got a ton of other pitchers, but it's hard, man, with a fastball that's getting to that point when you're getting over. For me, I expect his strikeouts to continue to drop down. He had a 374 xFIP last year. I kind of am seeing his actual ERA kind of get up to that point, at this point. Again, this is, you know, very different, but sort of similar to the points I was making with Molina. I'd rather jump off the train one stop early than one stop late. And although Greinke, again, was still a quality pitcher, he throws innings, which is a huge deal. It's just something for me. Again, a 374 xFIP, you know, last year, that strikes me as more in line with how I felt like he was pitching when I was watching him in the various games.
He was in a pitcher's park when he started. He finished in a pitcher's park. I think that helps a lot. Because a lot of times you'll see these guys who have better underlying stats, like Lance Lynn. It's because he was in a hitter's park. Well, yeah, that's going to make sense. If he pitches that well in a hitter's park, his underlying stats are going to be better. His ERA is going to be worse. If you've got a guy, Jack Flaherty, who's pitching in front of the best defensive infield in baseball and he throws a lot of ground balls, his underlying stats are going to be a lot better. Now, the opposite is true as well. We're going to see guys like Zach Greinke pitch in pitcher's parks whose underlying stats are saying, he's due for some regression. Well, yeah, if you pitched in a neutral park, that would be true, but I think he's going to hang on here, and he nailed it. This is why I like guys like Zach Greinke, like Clayton Kershaw, like Madison Bumgarner, because they're so dang durable and consistent. You know exactly what you're going to get. There's no risk that, you know, there's a lot of guys every year who are drafted in the top 20 and just fall apart. Zach Greinke right now, his ECR is number 18, so kind of in the middle of where we've got him. I've got him at 11. You've got him at, what was it, 23? So I'm a little bit high on Zach Greinke, but I know who he's going to be. Every single year, 187-plus Ks. He's not a big strikeout guy, but 187-plus Ks. That's top 25 in baseball. Every single year, even though he's not a good Ks guy, he's going to finish in the top 25 in Ks. He's going to get a ton of wins in Houston. His ratios, I think, are going to be solid as well. There's no chance that he blows up and has an ERA north of 4 or a whip north of 1.2.
Yeah, all of those are good points. And again, there are a couple of things with him. Number one, the innings. He's almost always over 200 innings. And not only is he on a great team with the Astros, but when you pitch that many innings and you go deeper into games, you just give yourself a better chance of wins. I mean, he's got, what is it, 15 plus wins in, like, I don't know, 8 of his last 9 seasons or something like that. There's a reason for that, because he pitches so many innings and goes deeper into games that he gets it. I get it. And again, look, I have him as an SP2, so I'm not like, oh God, avoid Zach Greinke at all costs. But yeah, I see just the decline in the strikeouts, and it makes me think the overall number will probably be there, right? I mean, he'll probably strike out, you know, if he gets to 200 innings or whatever he does, he'll probably still have, you know, 180 strikeouts. That's certainly there. But again, for me, you know, he is in the circle of trust. So I don't know, the top 25 pitchers for me are like, okay, these are guys who I feel good about. But I just, you know, with the decline, a little bit worried.
I've only got 20 starting pitchers I feel great about. Like, for instance, you've got Charlie Morton ahead of Zach Greinke. Morton's not in my circle of trust. He's just outside of it. I got him at number 22.
What about Morton worries you other than his age?
Just how many innings he's thrown, man. I guess they finally ramped him up and he's shown he can do it, but I'm not sure that he... A lot of times when you see these guys get their innings ramped up, either they take a huge step back in innings the next year because they get hurt, or they take a huge step back in ratios because their arms aren't used to throwing 200 innings.
Yeah. I mean, look, he did. I get it. 194 innings. By far a career high. The 167 innings the year before that was second highest in his career. He is getting up there in age.
Also had an unsustainable home run to fly ball ratio. He led the league in homers per nine.
Yeah, but again, I mean, he never gives up home runs in his career, right? I mean, yeah, he...
Sure, okay, sure. That is who he is, yeah.
Yeah, that is part of what he is. That's part of how he pitches. And again...
He finished number three in the Cy Young last year? Oh, the Rays got him for so cheap.
This is the thing. This is the thing with the Rays, right? You always you know, count on the Rays. And again, he's talked about retirement. I don't know what this delay is going to do to anybody's plans. He's 36 years old, but he's talked about retiring after this year. This is the last year of his contract. There is a club option, but so this might be it for him. So he might get out. But you look at his numbers. It's really the age. If you're concerned about the age, I totally get that. I made the same point with Greinke. But with Greinke, you saw a decline. With Morton, I mean, he had the highest strikeout rate of his career. His walks per nine went down to a career low almost. So he's really at a point where I don't see anything in the numbers to make me worried.
He was so good last year. 240 Ks.
He's great. I mean, 11.1 per nine. You know, he's there. He's won the last three games, 14, 15, 16 games. He pitches deep into games. He's behind a good team. I like him. I'll easily take him over Greinke for sure.
I might not move him up, but he extends the circle of trust a little bit further. He was really dang good, man.
He really is.
Yeah. So I've got two other guys. I said like two starting pitchers. We were talking about six. I'm sorry, man. So I've got Chris Sale at 23. You've got him at 42. And initially I was thinking, okay, this just means I've updated my rankings since the coronavirus thing because, okay, obviously Chris Sale's going to be back sooner. But then I saw you've got Mike Clevinger at 7 and I've got him at 15. So I did move Clevinger up from like 25 to 15 and I moved Sale up from like 40 to 20. But you must have had Sale a lot lower. I guess you're just not drafting him.
Correct. That you have accurately summed up my feelings on Chris Sale. Look, here's the deal, dude. If Chris Sale does not have Tommy John surgery, I am going to be utterly shocked. You know, just listening to the way he talks, he is just sounds a little bit resigned to it. And
why wouldn't they have already done it?
Well, I think they're trying to. He was supposed to. Remember, he was originally like, they were like, oh, boy, we don't really love what we see. We're going to let you throw in a week, see if you're pain free. I think that week is up. Maybe they've delayed it now because of all the delays with the season. But I think, you know, they were very much like, we're going to see what it is. And he then gave a press conference where he was like, yeah, definitely Tommy John surgery is a possibility. You hear a pitcher himself talk like that, that really makes me worried. So for me, look, 42nd, that might be a little too low at this point because I did move him up. Yeah, I mean, I think I had him like 60. It was just a point where I was like, I don't really know where I'd have to get to with Chris Sale to feel like I want to draft him.
Yeah, but still, just don't draft him is what you're saying.
That's basically what I'm saying. I mean, if it got to a point where I was in a league where everybody was me, and there would come a point where I would say, okay, at this point, I'll take the chance, but there's no way I'm going to get him. So, yeah, I would avoid him personally. And you know, even with the delay in the season, there are guys, again, we talked about Clevinger. Clevinger now, whenever the season starts back up, is going to be fine. He's going to be ready to roll. So, for me, he goes right back to where he was before I bumped him down for the injury. Chris Sale, a little bit of a different story. Same thing with Aaron Judge, who I moved up somewhat, but not a ton, because I don't know if the stress fracture in his rib is going to mean he's out for the whole year anyway. So
here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to our expert rankings. I'm only going to select the experts who have updated their rankings since MLB was suspended. Okay, so we're not looking at all the rankings. I just want to see what his ECR is among those guys. See how far they moved him up. Okay, so he's up at 30 now. So I'm higher on Chris Sale than most people. Okay, and let's see where Mike Clevinger is. Mike Clevinger is all the way up at number 12 now.
Yeah, and I have him. I'm high on Clevinger. I mean, I think I love Clevinger, you know, again, that group, there's a lot of guys, you know, I think there was the top five, and now Verlander can be back in there because he should be fine when the season starts. Cole, DeGrom, Verlander, Scherzer, and Buehler. That's like their own little tier for me. Then for me, it's the Bieber, Clevinger, Strasburg, Flaherty, Corbin, you know, they're that. You know what I mean? That's where I am with them.
Do you put Strasburg in that group? Strasburg's in the first group. He's with Cole, DeGrom, Scherzer. I've got him at number four or five. I've got Verlander at five.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fine. I have Verlander back at three. I think he might have been two before the injury, but he's back at three for me because I expect him to be fine. Yeah, it's fine. Strasburg's in the second tier for me. But yeah, with all those guys, I don't feel crazy, you know, different about it if I wind up with Strasburg or Clevinger or Flaherty or Corbin. And not a huge deal for me. But yeah, I like Clevinger. I loved him coming in. I think he was seventh when I first did my ranking. So he goes right back there.
What do you think about Rich Hill now in the last round, now that we're not playing until June probably?
100%, and I actually think that I may have neglected. That's one of the things I was doing, and I was thinking about it today because, you know, one of the things we're doing, I don't know when baseball's going to come back, but I know you're like me. We are updating our rankings still.
Yeah, but I forgot to move up Rich Hill until I just thought about him, and I moved him from 112 all the way up to 50.
Yeah, I think I had him at one. Wow. All right. I had him at 145. I've got to get him way up, obviously, since then. Yeah, 100%. And I look, when Rich Hill pitches, he's going to be effective. You know that. And I mean, we don't know when the season's going to start. I'm sort of in my head, I don't know about you, I'm like banking on, I don't know, June 1st.
June 1st is what some players in MLB are expecting. So,
and that's kind of what I'm thinking about it when I'm looking at my ring. Because if it's earlier, great. If it's later, it's later. I think there will be baseball at some point. But yeah, with a guy like Rich Hill, that's awesome because that means that he's got to fly way up. So yeah, I realize also as you were saying, and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to move Hill up my ranking. So I will do that after this podcast.
So I'm looking up a stat about Rich Hill, but while I do, everyone who listens to the podcast knows I love Julio Urias. You love him even more than I do. 8 spots higher than me? Dan!
Again, for me, this is all about the postponement. Okay, before the season, you were way higher in him than I was.
Oh, great point, because it's not just injured guys who are going to benefit. It's guys on innings limits. Oh, great point. I'm moving him up to where you have him.
And get McCullers up there, too. I know you loved him even before it. Now, his 120 innings, that's a full season now.
Ooh, Luzardo, too. He's going to go in the top 80 picks now.
Luzardo, right. Guys, like, that's another thing to think about. I touched on it briefly when we opened the podcast, but it's not just, okay, you know what? This is great. Giancarlo Stanton now is not really going to miss any time with his injury. Let's get it up. It's also pitchers with innings limits are a big deal, and that's Urias. That's really all it is with me. It's like, okay, look, he's never pitched a ton of innings, 81 2/3 last year. He's probably going to be capped at 120, but now, even if you're the Dodgers, if you're basically pitching him starting in June, you can basically just let him go, and he'll be fine, and you can do it, and that's essentially, okay, here's a full season from Julio Urias. What am I looking at? He might even go higher when all is said and done. We're really going to see, but yeah, him, Luzardo, McCullers, those guys all get a bump. It's not about the stuff. It's just about the innings.
All right. I love the call, man. I'm definitely changing my mind on a couple of these guys. I'm really glad you brought it up. Now, I've got another stat for you. I was looking it up on Rich Hill. Okay, so since Rich Hill joined the starting rotation back in 2015, yeah, okay, he's got a lot less innings than these guys. But inning for inning, he's been a top 5 pitcher in baseball. There's 5 guys with ERAs under 3, strikeouts per 9, above 10. Rich Hill's one of them. It's Clayton Kershaw, Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, and Rich Hill. He's that good. He's that good, guys.
He's oddly enough one of the most reliable starters in all of fantasy sports, even when you think about the fact that he's never going to throw innings, because you know that going in. You're like, okay, here's what I'm going to get. I'm going to get some innings from this guy. I'll hope for 100. You'll get plenty of strikeouts per start. You'll get great ratios when he's in there. And you know there's no chance of getting a full season. So it's like, okay, I'm going to draft him with the understanding that I'm going to get somewhere between 60 and 100 innings, and then I'll be fine. I'll make contingency plans going in. It's great that you can bank on that. So yeah, on a start-by-start basis, he's great.
All right, let's move on to relief pitchers here really quick. You're quite low on Brad Hand, and you're a lot higher than me on Edwin Diaz. Now, you're right on the money with Edwin Diaz where ECR has him, but why do you like him more than Brad Hand?
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism, and I debated those guys a lot. Look, Diaz, horrific last year, and again, I'm a Mets fan, so I got to really, really focus closely on him.
The worst. He was, well, not the worst. Craig Kimbrel was the worst.
yeah, but at least Kimbrel only did it for like half the season since he got that late deal. Diaz, obviously, the Mets gave up a ton to get him with Kelnick and everything like that. 5.59 ERA, 1.38 whip. His slider, it was all about the slider, man. I mean, in 2018, when he had that dominant year, batters hit, you know, had a 190 wOBA against it. Last year, a 387 wOBA against the slider, right? Batters batted 129 against it in 2018, 297 against it last year. So that's terrible. You've got Seth Lugo, who obviously took over the job late in the year. You've got Dellin Betances, who now, again, is probably going to be fully ready by the start of the season. So you've got other options. But again, my philosophy on relievers is that they are incredibly volatile. Okay, you really can have right. Well, you know that, right? That Diaz is proof of that. He bounces back and forth between, oh my God, you're the best pitcher I've ever seen in my life, and oh my God, I wouldn't trust you to protect a 7-run lead right now in the ninth. He just bounces back and forth. I like Jeremy Hefner, the new Mets pitching coach. I think he's going to have a better approach with Diaz. So for Diaz, where he is, look, the Mets want him to be the closer because they have to. You know, Brody Van Wagenen needs to justify the deal, and so he's got as much upside as any reliever. For Hand, I've no problem if you want to take Hand over him. The way I really looked at Hand is last year there were just some signs that made me a little worried. His ground ball rate just completely cratered. I mean, it was down to like 26% or something like that. Batters hit his fastball a lot better than they did the previous year, about a 270 against it compared to just 202. The bigger deal for me, and this is a little bit of how I look at saves, is I like job security. Hand's not going to lose his job at the start or anything like that, even if he probably struggles a little bit. But
he's got some horses behind him, man.
He does. He absolutely does. I think they want him in that role still because he's been the closer. However, he has just a club option left on his deal. They were talking about dealing him at the deadline last year. I think the Indians...
Ooh, good call. Crud.
Right? That's really what I look at. I would expect Hand to be dealt at this point. And again, where we are right now is we might start up in June with a trade deadline, you know, of July. That means you're drafting a guy like Hand for 2 months of saves, for me, maybe at the maximum, especially with the horses behind him.
I think the deadline gets pushed back. I mean, they're going to be playing into November. Playoffs are probably going to be down in, like, Miami or something.
Yeah, right? Let's go to at least a neutral warm site. Don't make me see, like, you know, don't make me take my kid to a Red Sox game in November, a regular season Red Sox game in November or anything like that. Please, it's going to be way too cold.
Let's not do Miami, by the way. Miami's ballpark is terrible. Let's go to San Diego. What a great ballpark.
I'm with you. Fantasy Pros team trip. Let's all go out there and go out there. But yeah, for me, it's a couple of things. It's one, a couple of warning signs with Hand. It's much more about the fact that I kind of expect him, given the way the Indians have operated lately, to be dealt by the time it all comes down to it, and I'll get fewer saves. That's really what it comes down to.
Man, I had him at relief pitcher number 5. I'm moving him down now because you're right, he might get traded, but I think the Indians are going to win the AL Central, and Twins fans hate me right now. But I'm a big fan of the Indians this year. Their bullpen is awesome. Their starting pitching is awesome, especially now that they get Clevinger back. They've got a pretty good lineup, too. They've got Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor. They've added to the lineup. And Brad Hand has 400 strikeouts in the last 4 seasons. I mean, this is a guy who commonly pitches 70, 80, 90 innings out of the pen.
Yeah, no, look, they are a good team. They've just operated in the... I mean, they were talking about dealing Francisco Lindor all offseason. It's like, what are you guys doing? It's really hard. I get that kind of everything, you know, went right for the Twins last year, but again, they did not.
I mean, I remember you and I both said the Twins were going to win last year, too. Like, it was a surprise, really.
No, they haven't sat on their laurels either. I mean, they added Josh Donaldson, right, who's really going to, you know, do well in that lineup. We both, you know, you and I both like Sano. We think he's going to, finally kind of break out. They added Kenta Maeda, you know, who's going to be a nice sort of addition to that thing. I think Jose Barrios is probably going to take a little bit of a step forward. They have a very solid bullpen. You know, they added, you know, they have obviously Sergio Romo. They still have Taylor Rogers, everything like that. So I think it's going to be tough for them to win, but it's much more about the way they're operating. They're operating like a team that doesn't really care that much about winning, right?
So like the Cardinals and the Cubs just don't care whatsoever.
They dumped Corey Kluber, basically, right? They got no return. It was sort of like a salary dump to the Rangers.
Sure, yeah. Man, that sucks. That could have been amazing.
You know, I've heard you were talking about it with Nick Pollock. Kluber's probably got a lot left in the tank. I get what he had last year, you know, before he got injured, didn't look great, and he had some concerns the previous year, but he's certainly a quality pitcher. And again, for them to just kind of give him away just makes me, and talk about dealing Lindor makes me think, I don't really know if you guys are all in this year. So I think they may deal Hand. But again, I have no problem if you don't look at saves that way, or if you think Hand might not get dealt. He has a club option. He might stay again. So that's fine for me. But for me, that's how I'm looking at it.
And last one, I don't disagree too much, but you're drafting Ryan Helsley. You've got him relief pitcher 35. You think there's a chance he wins this Cardinals job, huh?
Look, I would certainly defer to you on that one in terms of what you think the chances are. But I look, at that point, again, he's reliever 35.
30% chance this guy gets a ton of saves. But here's the problem. Jordan Hicks is coming back. We might want to draft and stash Jordan Hicks.
Yeah, I mean, coming. I don't know, again, what the timeline is for him with the Tommy John.
June, man.
Is it June? All right. So, you know, you see sometimes these guys come back and they're good. Sometimes they take a little while. So you do have Hicks. And again, now that the season's pushed back, I think that's all fair. But, you know, you've got a lot of guys in that pen. I mean, you could do one of, I don't know, four or five guys who could be the closer when all is said and done. So for me, I like Helsley. There was some buzz about him.
I wanted to see him in the rotation, man, because the dude's a good pitcher. He used to be a starter.
I wasn't focused too much on him when the season started, but I really like what he's got underlying his stuff. So again, I'm not going crazy with him. I'm not like, go out and get him. But, you know, 35th reliever, yeah, I'll take my chance on him because I think he at least has a shot to be the closer.
What if Jordan Hicks pulls a Henry Rowengarter? Is that how you say it?
Yes, actually.
Can you believe I actually know a movie reference, by the way?
Well, not only a movie reference, but the fact that you pronounce that name correctly, considering how difficult that... I mean, the whole point of the movie is the man...
It's a baseball movie, man. I've seen all the baseball movies.
I guess, man. The manager can't even, you know, he calls him Rosenbagger and Garden Hoser and all that.
That's the whole point of the movie.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so what if Hicks pulls a Rowengartner and instead of throwing 104... He throws 124.
Yeah, I mean, that could happen.
It's possible, right?
No, it's actually not possible. No. I mean, he'd have to break his arm and have the tendons heal too tight and have that weird thing.
Haven't you heard of Sid Fitch, man?
Yeah, well, you know, I can't even remember what his name was, but that movie, The Scout or something with Brendan Fraser and...
Steve Nebraska.
Whatever he was, where he comes.
I know all the movie references. Look at me, man.
Oh, my God. You have completely changed my opinion on you in the last, I don't know, minute and a half because of how in-depth your movie knowledge of baseball movies at least is. I'm quite impressed. Well done.
Yeah, Steve Nebraska, Sid Finch. If you guys don't know the Sid Finch story, oh man, look it up. It's an absolutely amazing true story about a guy who mastered the art of pitching by turning his arm into a catapult. Just a super smart, super weird guy. And he threw faster than anyone else in the history of the world. And the Mets signed him. And he decided not to play baseball. It's the most amazing sports story I've ever read. You got to go check it out. Just type in The Curious Case of Sid Finch. You guys have to read this story. Amazing. All right, guys. That's all for today's show. You got a ton of bonus content. Nobody's complaining except maybe my producer. But it's been 5-6 days. And plus... I don't know if you guys noticed, I was getting healthier as the show went on, so I had to keep going. So Dan, not only did you get me sick, but you also healed me a little bit, so I forgive you.
I'm an incredible human being. I have all powers going on. So yeah, look, you do sound better than when we started, so I'm glad to hear it. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to continue to talk baseball. We'll continue to pump out content for sure, and you know, eventually baseball will be back, and it'll be better than ever.
Thanks also for changing my mind on some stuff. Man, I can't wait till sports are back. Everyone stay safe. Enjoy yourselves, your time with family, and try to win that Fernando Tatis signed bat at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. Really easy to enter. Again, that's fantasypros.com/MLB contest. For Dan Harris, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.